Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's time for The Upswing on WTMJ, presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Showcasing businesses, entrepreneurs, and community leaders throughout the great state of Wisconsin. Here's Jeff Sherman.
Because I'm going to make this place yours.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Trading your Monday momentum. That's what we do here on The Upswing. So let's go. Let's get right to it. Dave Spano, President and CEO of Annex Wealth Management, jumps on right off the bat. Good morning, Dave. How are you this beautiful Monday?
I'm great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on. What a beautiful day.
Indeed, yes. Yeah. So did you get to any of the RNC events last week or any of the convention?
Yeah, I was down there. You know, as you know, we have a office in the Pfister Hotel across from your beautiful place down there. And so we were camped there and had a lot of opportunity to talk to delegates, talk to politicians, to Tulsi Gabbard, and, you know, Ted Kellner, chair of the host committee. So it was really a great event to be down there.
Very good. All right. So I wanted to have you on for many reasons this morning. I mean, What impact does President Biden have dropping out of the race? What is it like short-term and long-term implications for the economy and for our investments?
Well, there's the policy differences between the two are pretty dramatic. And so you have to say, you know, one policy first versus the next. What is that going to do for the economy? What is it going to do for sectors, for example? So you could just talk, you know, from the very top is, you know, the economy. You can compare and contrast. You're going to have to say that Vice President Harris, you know, that was the Biden economy as well. So she's certainly tied together with that versus what Trump had. And you can compare, for example, unemployment, inflation, the economic growth of the country. All of those things are going to come into play. And that is really going to be the conversation because, as you well know, economics and politics certainly are connected.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, you know, the truth is the economy's had some amazing moments and some big pitfalls under both Trump and Biden. So, you know, what could we expect? You know, we're going to fast forward here, but what could we expect under a second term from Trump in terms of taxes and interest rates and investor status?
Yeah, that's a great question. So you'll remember that he put in those tax cuts back when he was in as president, and they are expected to roll off. And because, you know, they had a term limit to them and they're expected to roll off in 2026. However, if he wins again, I would expect that they get extended. By contrast, certainly the Democratic policy has certainly been not to have that happen, number one, and number two, actually to go the other way. There's a major discussion among economists about what would happen if the Democrats implemented their tax plan, which is to raise taxes, not to lower taxes. For example, they're talking about raising the capital gains tax all the way up to ordinary income. So, for example, depends on where you are for an economic tax bracket, but you sell your house, you could pay capital gains taxes on that, for example, but you sell a stock. That would be one. Number two, certainly they're talking about an unrealized gains tax, which I'm not sure is constitutional, but that is something they're talking about. In other words, if you have something in your portfolio and you haven't sold it, they want to attempt to tax that. Obviously, that doesn't exist today. And obviously, you could take that to the nth degree and say, for example, if you have a farm and, you know, you're working that farm and, you know, your grandfather paid X dollars for it and it's worth five times that right now, you would have to pay a tax on unrealized appreciation. So there's a lot to vet. There's no question that the tax policies between the D's and the R's are dramatically different. You talked about inflation. And so inflation, obviously, when Trump had it, when he left, it was under 2%. For a number of reasons, inflation skyrocketed. You know, you can say it was supply chain. It was COVID. It certainly was some of the American Rescue Plan, for example. All of that went into play, Jeff, to raise inflation spiking out at 9%. It certainly is headed in the right direction. I mean, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised at all, Jeff, if you see a Fed cut in September because they're getting towards their federal mandate.
Yeah, can you stick around for a couple more minutes after the break? Yeah. I do want to get your thoughts on what we can expect to hear from the Fed and Chairman Powell this week. This is The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to the Monday Upswing. Dave Spano, President and CEO of Annex Wealth Management, joins us this morning for a couple more minutes. Dave, what can we expect to hear from the Fed this week?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see the Fed really make any moves this week, but of course they're meeting again in September, and it's a high expectation that they will lower interest rates perhaps by a quarter point in September. But, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, and you're going to hear a lot about inflation over the next 90 days. And in fact, it's really important to us and our clients as well, because that is a basic input. You know, if you're at point A and want to get to point B, and we want to grow your portfolio and reduce your taxes, inflation is a big part of that. So we spend a lot of effort and time trying to figure that out. But both sides, you can argue, are going to have inflationary policies. So again, that puts Chairman Powell in a predicament again, because even if they cut rates, that doesn't mean that you're not going to have another flare-up no matter who wins in inflation around the quarter for many reasons. You know, you talk about tariffs. Are tariffs inflationary? You can talk about, you know, more spending. Is that inflationary? So on both sides, it's not clear sailing that inflation is going to get back to its target.
Yeah. In the next couple segments, we're going to talk about the technology outage from over the weekend. And what in terms of a investor lens, what should investors be aware of as it pertains to IT failures like Friday's CrowdStrike?
Yeah, it's really amazing. And of course, you talk about what that happens in the lack of efficiency. And it should be the basis of both parties' move forward, is how do we get more efficient? Because if we want to grow ourselves out of $34 trillion in debt, we have to be more efficient. And that's going to be using technology, some AI as well. So there's no question that both sides are all in on becoming more efficient. How you get there and how you do that, obviously that's a point of debate. But you're going to have to say, do you use technology? Can you be more efficient? And how do you grow yourself out? For example, the Republican platform is certainly going to talk about the growth of GDP. No question about that, number one. And so are the Democrats. And number two is, how do you reduce the budget deficit? And those are conversations that are going to be had. Now, you want to split that apart about technology. You can use technology for everywhere from in the office to energy. And for example, you're going to hear a lot about energy over the next 90 days. The Democrats are certainly going to push the EV policies, and the Republicans are going to talk about perhaps more drilling. And so there is going to be a very big departure. And, you know, maybe we cannot talk about people, and we can talk about policy. I'm a little bit of an optimist on that, but we haven't seen that quite yet. But that is really what the conversations that we're going to have over the next 90 days, an extraordinarily important election.
Very good. All right. Optimism. That's what we love here on The Upswing. Dave, have a great week, and we'll talk again soon.
Good. Thanks for having me on. See ya.
Thanks, Dave. On to travel plans at MKE and around the world. Obviously, on Friday, we're kind of thrown into a disarray, right? Global technology outage, disrupted businesses and government agencies and critical services like airfare. And it just caused a ton of delays, thousands of flights to be delayed. Bunch of people couldn't get out of Milwaukee that were in town for the RNC. And since we're in the middle of travel season, I really wanted to dive into kind of potential red flags and technology traps and even scams to look out for when you're traveling. So we have today Larry Zelvin, who is head of BMO's Financial Crimes Unit. Larry joins us on the Tri-County Contracting Hotline. Larry, welcome to The Upswing. You're not in the Milwaukee BMO Tower today, are you?
No, Jeff, I'm not, but it's still great to be with you and your listeners. So thanks very much for having me this morning.
I appreciate your time. So from a travel lens, what should we look out for, especially after kind of the implications of what happened over the weekend?
Yeah, look, you know, what happened over this weekend was absolutely horrible, inconvenient to a lot of folks. But, you know, what I'm going to talk about are things that are more personal and less systemic, like you saw with the CrowdStrike. Look, when you look at travel scams, when people go overseas, they just have to realize that they're in a different environment and the risk changes. You know, when you look at the conventional stuff, everything from broken taxi meters, you get in a taxi and all of a sudden the meter doesn't work and Now they're making up the cost, so you've got to watch out for that. You know, there are folks that may spill something on your clothing in order to distract you, to steal your purse, your wallet. Actually, that happened to my father many, many years ago in New York, and it's still very, very effective. You know, one of the other things people need to be worried about, and it happened to me when I was in spring break many, many years ago in college, is all of a sudden somebody shakes your hand and you find narcotics in your hand, and it's like, oh my gosh. And next thing you know, the police are coming, and now they're not real police, but they're scamming you to tell you that if you don't give them money, that they're going to send you to jail. So there's all kinds of crazy things that are happening on a physical side. And then obviously I'd be more than happy to talk a little bit about what's happening in the cyber world, because that's actually affecting a whole lot more people and becoming even harder to detect.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of AI scams out there. I mean, I was booking a flight for early August, and I think I'm pretty savvy. But I was surprised at how many interesting offers and kind of suspect messages and almost like questionable follow-ups I was getting after searching for flights and pricing for like a day and a half. I mean, what should we look out for in terms of kind of cyber crime when booking flights?
Yeah, so let's just talk about cyber crime, and then we can talk about how AI or artificial intelligence is actually improving it. Because honestly, it's not really the scams or the frauds that are changing. It's just it's becoming a lot more believable, and their ability to do this at a much higher rate of scale, impact more people, is just been going crazy. But look, when you look at Booking.com, which is one of the more reputable travel sites, they said they've seen a 500 to 900% increase in AI-related travel scams in the past 18 months. McAfee, which is a cybersecurity company, said one in four surveyed Americans have fallen victim to a travel scam or know somebody that has. In most cases, they've lost well over $1,000 to a single scam. So these things aren't net new, but rather supercharged. And also the technology requirement to do these all lowered because AI makes things so much easier. So what are we talking about? Well, first, search engine optimization. There are ways they can manipulate search engines, so if you Google or whatever your favorite site is, but to put their sites up in front. So one of the cautions I tell folks is just watch the first site you get to and be maybe a little bit more of a skeptical consumer there. The second one is when you find an internet search site and you click on it, be careful because they may be trying to impersonate travel websites by creating familiar branding, logos, or verbiage. They'll also look to what you're trying to find, whether it's rentals, timeshares, vacation clubs, hotels, or tours. But these fake websites, what you really need to be careful of is when they start asking you for payment information or personal information. And you also got to be careful before you click on these links because they could download malware onto your computer.
All right. Larry Zelvin, head of BMO's Financial Crimes Unit. We're going to go to break, but we'll come back. What should we look out for in terms of pre-TSA check-ins and other red flags as we travel for the rest of the summer? This is The Upswing presented by Horicon Bank. Welcome back to The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank. Larry Zelvin, head of BMO's Financial Crimes Unit, joins us again. So, Larry, a couple more things on my mind as we continue on in this busy summer travel season. What about the third-party TSA pre-checks? I mean, what should we kind of be on the lookout for with those sites?
Yeah, look, it's just make sure you're actually dealing with TSA and the U.S. government. You know, you've got to be really a skeptical user of all these things. Be very careful, if you get rerouted to another site that's not a .gov site or something you don't recognize, you know, before you share your credit card or payment information, do know that U.S. government probably won't ask for instant payment systems like Venmo, Zelle, wire transfer, cryptocurrency, or gift card, so that should be another detector. And then, by all means, feel free to reach out to the .gov or call the government phone numbers that you see on .gov sites and just validate that the site you're using is real. It may save you a lot of time, energy, and grief.
All right. What about QR codes? We're all getting really comfortable with them now on so many different levels, but what should we be on the lookout for and be careful of? Because they're so incredibly convenient. They're everywhere. But should we instantly trust any link?
No, you should just be the opposite. I mean, the problem with QR codes is you can't actually see the link unless you are really going to go to it. They're meant to be more convenient.
Right.
But the problem with these QR codes is, unfortunately, people put stickers on top, so it may take you to a different site. You may also get some packages that we're seeing in the mail with instructions on what the package is and why it was sent, and it's illegitimate. Then you'll see some personal emails with QR codes, and you got to wonder if those are your friends who really are asking for a QR code. But just look for tampering on the stickers. You know, don't ever download a QR scanning app. And again, watch this place. It's in public. I mean, a lot of the parking meters are being taken over. People are losing big money there. So, again, you just got to be careful and skeptical, especially if you're giving your money away.
Yeah. All right. So, as we, I tend to do this often. I, you know, just kind of see who's buying and selling on the event side with tickets. What about event tickets, especially when we're out of market and maybe kind of out of our comfort zone? What should we pay attention to there?
Yeah, look, we're seeing everything from trains and buses and venues and museums, sporting events with the Olympics coming up. But look, just be careful of phishing emails with great offers that seem too good to be true. They probably are. Be careful on looking for Ticketmaster on sites that are from third parties. It's not them. Watch out for speculative selling. If people are saying, hey, if you give me your credit card or payment information, you'll go to the head of the line. That's probably not true.
Mm-hmm.
Watch out for the printed tickets. They're getting really, really hard to distinguish. So just be very careful there as you're buying those.
All right. Very good. Larry Zelvin from BMO Financial Crimes Unit. I appreciate you spending time with us and kind of helping us level set as we get out of this technology bump from last week.
You bet, Jeff, and good luck to you all. Be safe.
Thank you. Thank you. Yesterday was National Ice Cream Day. I'm going to extend that holiday for one more day. Welcome back to The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank. Oh, I love talking to entrepreneurs, and that's what we have for the rest of the show today. Yesterday was National Ice Cream Day. I'm sure you celebrated appropriately. I'm going to extend the holiday, if you will, one more day. Wisconsin's only Ben & Jerry's Scoop Shop opened last Sunday, which was July 14th, I think. I don't know. This last week is kind of a lot of stuff happening in this week, but it opened right on Broadway in the historic Third Ward. It's the former home of Paintball Dave's. If you're familiar with the neighborhood, Paintball Dave's goes way back. I think that closed in like 2016, but the entire building right there on Broadway in Chicago was rehabbed in like 2019, 2020 with apartments and kind of a beautiful first floor retail space that's been used for a variety of uses until now. That Trisha and our guest, Fred Rasmussen, jumped in and said, all right, we need to bring Ben & Jerry's to Wisconsin. The ice cream shop offers a ton of different flavors that Fred will go into. But Fred, thanks for taking the time to be here this morning. I'm sure it's been a busy week for you.
It has been an amazing week. We have been so warmly received by the community. Our staff is amazing. We're really trying to reach out and make sure that we can get as many customers through to have that Ben & Jerry's experience, which is all about having fun with ice cream.
Yes, indeed. So tell me about the experience. Give us a little bit about your background and then, you know, for you and your wife, kind of what led to that, you know, getting up in the morning and saying, wow, I need to explore purchasing a Ben & Jerry's franchise.
So my wife is now a retired kindergarten teacher.
Okay.
She did that for 27 years. We have been Ben & Jerry's flavor fanatics forever. That's a little plug for our website. We have a flavor fanatics program for people to join if you're going to be a frequent person to the area. And we have some friends that own one. We have
in what market?
In the Illinois market.
Okay.
And just talking to them and how positive their experience has been, we jumped in and said, this is something that we want to do. Ben & Jerry's as a corporation is something that has a three-part mission that we believe in. And I'm sure you'll ask me a question about that coming up.
Yes.
But as educators, service, and being a part of a community is something that is natural to us. Mm-hmm. Ben & Jerry's really believes in that. Our daughter just graduated from Milwaukee School of Engineering.
Okay.
So
it was time for life's next venture.
It was time for life's next venture. And the Third Ward is a space that is absolutely amazing. And we've been in quite a bit with her over the years, and it just seemed like a natural fit. Yeah.
So how long was the process? I mean, give me some insight there. Are there others vying for? Do you have the statewide rights? Or like, how does that work? You submit something online, or you go through the right channels, and what's that process look like?
So Ben and Jerry's, the first step is to be approved as a franchisee. And it's a lengthy process. It took us approximately 6 months. It was a series of interviews that covered everything from an understanding of Ben and Jerry's as a corporation, to an understanding of how to run a business in a scoop shop.
Okay.
And then making sure that you do a site proposal that meets their standards.
Okay. Obviously, Ben and Jerry's is now owned by Unilever, but like, did like Ben Cohen and Jerry Greenfield come to your house and like interview you on the flavors? Like, what's the process from the interview standpoint?
So a knowledge of the flavors is a huge part of it.
Okay.
An understanding of customer service.
Yeah.
And really what we are not, we don't have a drive-through. We weren't looking at a location with a drive-through, because it really is about the experience, and it starts how you're greeted. It continues into a new experience we have in our scoop shop. It's a new thing that will be coming out in future scoop shops. It's called a flavor wall. And it has pictures and descriptions, and it tries to make it more interactive. And then it continues through your experience with our scoopers. We want you to, everybody comes in. We really believe that you can change the world through ice cream. And we haven't encountered anybody who has had a scoop who hasn't left with a smile.
All right.
That's our goal.
Fred Rasmussen, one of the owners of the new Ben & Jerry's Scoop Shop, located in Milwaukee's historic Third Ward. So finding the right location for Wisconsin's first Ben & Jerry's, we'll talk to Fred about that. Coming up next, this is The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank. Welcome back to the Monday Upswing. Yesterday was National Ice Cream Day. We're extending the holiday for another day, talking with the owner, well, couple owners, Fred's wife. Had to take care of some business at the store this morning, but Fred Rasmussen is one of the owners of the new Ben & Jerry's franchise that just opened up in the Third Ward. So, Ben, I knew that would happen, Fred. As you're looking at locations, what did that process look like? You're just searching online? Does Ben & Jerry's give you some ideas? Do you just say, I know we want to be here? Is it like buying a house? How does that location scouting go?
It's a little bit of all of those.
Yeah.
So Ben & Jerry's provides you with some very specific criteria of what they'd like to see to help really drive your business. And foot traffic is a large part of that. So having a daughter who has graduated from Milwaukee School of Engineering, we had spent a lot of time dining in the Third Ward and shopping down there, and really fell in love with it. And when we started this process, once we got approved as franchisees, we started the location search. And it was very quick for us.
Mm-hmm.
We went to one spot, and we found our perfect location.
Wow. You look at the bullets on the Ben & Jerry's site for what they're looking for for new stores, and it's large, vibrant downtowns, especially tourist sections of a downtown where people go to experience and enjoy a city, entertainment centers, and tourist and vacation destinations such as beaches and boardwalks. I mean, we have a lot of those in the market, but like we were talking about over the break, Milwaukee wasn't really on the Ben & Jerry's radar.
They were unaware of how vibrant the Third Ward was. My wife and I both took turns. We had to submit what we call foot traffic counts. You literally sit and you count the number of people that go by.
That was all on you as a franchise owner. You know, prove to us that this is going to work.
Correct. So we had to do what's called a site proposal, and it included a lot of information about the area, other stores, foot traffic in the area, potential for growth. A large part of what we're going to do, in addition to our activities in the scoop shop, is we hope to immerse ourselves into the community and do things like catering events and fundraising opportunities with schools. That is a passion for us. Ben & Jerry's wants us to become an active member of the community. So we're looking to go out and partner in those ways as we go forward. But being in our location, as close as we are to Summerfest, as close as we are to the public market, we sat there and did foot traffic counts and again, that demographic study on us and submitted a proposal, and Ben & Jerry's was blown away.
Did your daughter choose to stay in the Milwaukee area after graduating from MSOE?
She is in the Milwaukee area. Right. I don't want to give her exact address, but she is living down on water.
Okay.
She is a biomolecular engineer.
Okay.
Has a job at a local company as an engineer, and is kind of really what drove us to this area. They say wherever your daughter lives, she's the one that's going to take care of you when you get old. So we're going to make sure we stay nice and close.
We talk often on the upswing about recruitment and retention. There's a real life example right there. Daughter goes to school here, decides to stay here. Parents invest in a business and grow it. That's beautiful. Now, like you said, when we come back from the break, I got to ask you, are you planning on moving fully to Milwaukee? And then, how important was the mission of Ben & Jerry's as you and your wife were looking at the franchise opportunity? An insightful, fun conversation on this day after National Ice Cream Day with Fred Rasmussen, who is one of the one of the owners of the new Ben & Jerry's franchise here in the heart of the city in the historic Third Ward. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Fred Rasmussen joins us. Him and his wife, Trisha, just opened up Wisconsin's very first Ben & Jerry's in the historic Third Ward. Fred, it's a bit of a family business for you, right? I mean, obviously your wife involved, but you really intend to bring all of your kids into the business at some point.
Absolutely. I have another son who is studying chemical engineering down in Terre Haute, Indiana. And he'll be up here this summer in a few weeks. He's finishing up an internship, but will be joining us this Saturday, actually, in the Scoop Shop. But our youngest son is a business major who took a class in high school called Small Business Incubator, and has really been a part of this journey with us from the beginning. Everything from the site proposal to the lease negotiation to helping us decide what our website can do. And it really is a family business for us.
All right. So how many total stores and locations are there? I always smile at the fact that as a lifelong Milwaukeean, Milwaukeeans get pretty excited about, ooh, the national brand is landing in our community, but we want the right national brands. It seems like this is one of those brands that people are pretty excited to have here.
Our community that we're in the Third Ward seems very excited that we're here. We have been talking people as the shop has been open only just a week. We've had international people come through, but we've had a very overwhelming response from people not only in the Third Ward area, but extending out into the suburbs as well. We're very excited
about
what's
happening.
And
there's less than, 200 total locations in the country now?
It's my understanding there's 197.
Okay.
There's a couple more being proposed. The majority of them are outside of the Midwest, South, West Coast, and then the East Coast.
Will this be your only Wisconsin location?
I hope not. Right. We need to get our flagship store up and running.
Come on, Jeff. We're only a week into it. Slow it down.
I would love to tell you we're going to have 6 of them in the next 10 years, but I want to make sure that we do things right and that our store in the Third Ward is representative of who we are in the Ben & Jerry's brand.
So how important was the B Corp mission of Ben & Jerry's to you and your wife?
It's huge. This is second career for us. So we vetted personally a variety of other options as we looked at the next phase of our life. As I said, we're both educators, and finding a company that aligned with who we are morally and socially is something that was near and dear to our heart, which is why we chose to go in this direction.
Yeah, I mean, that Ben & Jerry's often talks about linked prosperity, right?
That, yes.
You know, that comes through in a lot of what they talk about. So you're coming into a custard market with ice cream. Is it a rise in all frozen treats lifts all boats, or what do you see between ice cream and custard?
I am going to be biased and say that we have the best ice cream in the market. We're a super premium brand, but I also know that we're in the land of custard and several other ice cream shops in the area. We believe that our goal is to bring happiness and that we can change lives through ice cream. And whether it's us or someone else, we want people to be happy and enjoy our brand as well.
So is it Cherry Garcia, Chunky Monkey? What is your favorite flavor? And then what's your wife's favorite flavor?
So I will tell you, it is seasonal for me.
Oh, okay.
So in the summertime, I'm a Chunky Monkey guy.
Right.
I will throw in some half-baked or some fish food. In the wintertime, we will do something called a hot shake. So we'll take some steaming hot chocolate, drop your favorite flavor in there and melt it throughout. So a salted caramel blondie and a hot chocolate makes all this gooey pleasure and joyness.
All right. Entrepreneurial story from education to ice cream opening in the historic Third Ward, Milwaukee, and actually Wisconsin's very first Ben & Jerry's franchise is now open. Fred Rasmussen and his wife, Tricia, are the owners. Joined us today on The Upswing. I appreciate your time, Fred.
Thank you so much. We're glad to be here. We'd love to see you come out to the store as well as the rest of the community.
All right. Very good.